What Women Must Know with Sheryl Selman, Mondays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Well, hi, everyone. This is Dr. Sheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know, a show about holistic perspectives and solutions for women's health matters and other life challenges. And I always want to say this is not a show exclusively for women. Men are always invited, especially for today's show. So we have a very interesting show. I want you to just hang in there for a moment. Let me just give you a few announcements. I want everyone to be sure to opt in to my website, whatwomenmustknow.com, because that's a great place to go to get your latest information, to get articles, to get special reports, to be on my list. So as new information, I have a new report coming out soon. You can be informed of my upcoming events. There are just lots of things going on, and that's the place to go, especially if you really want to stay informed with truthful information so you can make the best decisions possible for yourself. So as always, please just go visit, learn, and opt in there. So let's get back to why I was saying this is a really special show today for everyone listening, men and women. It's a little different topic than most of the topics that I have on this program, and I am always really open to exploring the kind of farthest reaches of what's going on in expanding our mind, expanding our world. And I was given a fascinating book called Flash Foresight, How to See the Invisible and Do the Impossible by Daniel Burris. And I was reading it, and I was so inspired. I'm a bit of a futurist myself. I like to look over the horizon, but I had no idea what's over the horizon until I read Daniel's book. And I thought it just would be wonderful to have Daniel with us today. He's a very busy man. Let me just share a little bit about his background with you, and then we're going to have Daniel on the show talking about Flash Foresight, How to See the Invisible and Do the Impossible. So Daniel Burris is considered one of the world's leading technology forecasters and business strategists, and is the founder and CEO of Burris Research, a research and consulting firm that monitors global advancements in technology-driven trends to help clients better understand how technological, social, and business forces are converging to create enormous untapped opportunities. He is the author of 6 books, including the New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller, Flash Foresight, How to See the Invisible and Do the Impossible. I think it's really important in these times of change, rapid change, that we do get some perspective, some insight, some peek into possibilities that are occurring as we speak. And I know that many of the things that Daniel will be talking about could be used personally in our lives. So it's going to be a really interesting show. And Daniel, I'm so glad you're here. Are you there?
I am here, and I'm also very happy to be part of the show. I mean, we are going to spend the rest of our lives in the future. It's a really important place, and not a lot of people spend much time thinking about it. So I think spending this time to really not only think about, but even look at how we can shape and design that future is time well spent.
Well, I think, I don't know, it's the only time that I consciously know I've lived in, Daniel, but it seems like it's a time of rapid, rapid change and transformation. Do you think it's always been like that, or are we really in a special time?
No, you know, we are in an extremely unusual and special time. And let me just describe that just a minute so you can see what I mean. There are actually three drivers of the accelerated pace of change. They've been around for a long time, but they are doing something they've never done before, and I can very easily and quickly describe the three so that people know what I'm talking about. One of them is the power of our computers, and we have something called Moore's Law. It's been around for decades. And that loss is processing power doubles every 18 months as the price drops in half. And that's been accurate for decades. And by the way, I've talked with Intel recently and other technology companies, and they agree with me that it's going to continue to go forward. But here's the interesting part of that. Doubling does not create a graph line that goes straight. It creates more of a hockey stick looking graph. To go from a 5 megahertz chip, which was a really dumb computer, by the way, to a 500 megahertz chip took 20 years. But to double that actually only took 8 months, because in doubling, it gets more interesting as you get out from time. And by the way, that was several years ago. Today, the computers that our kids are using just 5 years ago would have been multi-million dollar machines that we would have called supercomputers. So what I'm doing is helping us to see that processing power is now, if it was a hockey stick, that graph of change, it's about where you'd put your hands. In other words, it's going almost vertical. We also have storage, because there's three of them. And storage is all that information and data that's in our phones, if you have a smartphone or is in your computer. And every time you get a new one, of course, there's more room. There's more stuff you can put in there. And that has been doubling even faster than processing power. And now that we're putting and storing things up in the cloud, meaning Google Docs and Mobile Me with Apple and so on, we almost have unlimited storage of information, pictures, photos, Facebooks, comments, Twitters. And then the third thing is bandwidth. And you may or may not remember the 512K modem, but boy, things were really slow back in those days, and you could never send a picture. Or you could, but it would take you a year just to send one picture. Now, of course, we have faster and faster bandwidth, and Cisco, a technology company, is putting out now implementing a new technology right now as we speak. And as they say, every man, woman, and child in China could send a high-definition video at the same time, and it would easily go through the system, which means bandwidth also is accelerating at a tremendous pace. Now, the reason those three are important to everyone listening, no matter what you do, is that processing power, meaning the power of our computer, storage, where we put all this stuff, and bandwidth, how we communicate it, touches every single business, and it even touches our lives, because now our computer has also become our smartphone. So in other words, our phones are getting smarter and smarter. So the changes that we're seeing now are actually, this next 5 years is becoming what I would call the great transformation, not change. And I'll take 1 second to, one minute to give you a definition of what transformation is compared to change, and then I'll let you ask me some questions about this. Because again, this is a unique time. Transformation. When I was a young guy, I could listen to my music, my albums, one album per spinning disc, and it was 33 and a third. And then as I got older, there was a technology change that came along, and I emphasize the word change. And that is, I could get one album per smaller spinning disc. It was called a CD. And ooh, I like that. First of all, it took up less space. They were smaller. But the real benefit was I got rid of the pops and the hisses and the scratches from my old albums. So I rebought all my old stuff, and of course all my new music I bought on CDs. Well, today, it's very different. Today I've got all of my music, along with all my photography, along with all my videos, along with all my emails in something called my smartphone. And it's with me all the time. And that hasn't changed how I listen to music. It transformed it. Well, in that same way, we're about to, in a short amount of time, just a couple of years, transform how we train people, how we educate our kids. We're going to transform how we sell, how we market, how we communicate with each other, how we collaborate, how we innovate, and the companies and the organizations that are only changing those things will have difficulty because we're now in a phase of transformation. So, yes, it is very different.
You know, one of the questions that comes to mind, because as we are rushing headlong into this transformation where, you know, we have smartphones and just this tremendous innovation going on with the technology and our computers, but Some of my concerns is that as we spend more and more time, I mean, there are more studies coming out, Daniel, talking about how kids are getting addicted, their brains are being altered. Even I just saw a study that said children, small children who watch a lot of things on the screen have narrower arteries going on in their bodies. I kind of wonder as we embrace this technology, it's also an unknown frontier, isn't it, in regards to some of the consequences that may be there as these technologies take over, as we spend more and more time on our computers. God knows I spend most of my day on my computer right now. And what are your thoughts about that aspect of this transformation?
Well, it's an extremely good question, and it's important to all of us, both personally as well as those of us that have kids. And what we have to understand is technology is not good or evil. You can use technology to give someone cancer or to cure their cancer. As a matter of fact, you can even use the same technology to do that. So it's not the tool, it's how you use it. These devices aren't making us use them more. It really is that we have allowed ourselves to get out of balance. And in some cases, we have not provided the balance that we need personally ourselves so that we can live a balanced life. We've gotten kind of out of whack a little bit, I think. And secondly, we've allowed the kids to get out of whack a little bit because it's kind of like the monkey that keeps pushing the sugar pill button, and it'll just keep pushing the button and eating the sugar until it blows up because it ate too much. And if you like what you're doing, you just keep doing it over and over again unless someone else can help you see that you need to engage in life in more than just a one-dimensional way. So as a parent, it means that we have to make sure that our kids are getting a balance to life and aren't just glued to a video game the entire time. And that you might think, well, that's not easy. They love these games. But they can also love other things if we help them to fall in love with those other things. It just takes a little effort to make sure that we give them that balance. Just like in our own lives, there used to be a number of different realities that we lived in. Now, this is going to sound a little philosophical, and that's actually because it is. we had our home life, and that was a certain reality. And then many of us that work had our professional life. And often they were different realities completely. Usually that's the case. And a lot of people that you work with who are your colleagues, they really don't know that much about your home life. And the people at home, your own kids and spouse, may not know that much about your work life. In other words, you really have two different realities, and yet there's another one, and that's called, your adult friends. I mean, maybe it's the people you play tennis with, or the people you are involved in a club with, or whatever. Well, that's another reality. And then there's vacation reality. So we all have these different realities, and we would recharge by going from one to the other. So when we went to work and we got back home again, home is fresh, it's not work anymore, and we could recharge to go back to work and vice versa. Today we've allowed, and again I think it's our fault, we've allowed technology to blur all of those realities into one, so that when you're on vacation you're really still at work. And when you're at work, your family can reach out to you, but on the other hand, when you're at home, work can reach out to you, and there's no way to recharge. So I think it's important for us to ask ourselves, there's a time to plug in and a time to unplug. So we've got to seek that balance. So my key point here is that it's not technology's fault. It really still comes to us and realizing that we have to maintain a balance in our lives.
So somehow it's like we are very seduced by the amazing technology and all the ways it can be applied. And our challenge is to stay aware in the midst of all these phenomenal changes so we can create a wholesome balance in our lives and not be swept away by all the excitement and enthusiasm and shimmery attractions that are going on with this. And it's like staying present in the midst of all this new fascinating things that we're exposed to all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And to realize that there is a a duality that exists. Now, once again, here I get into philosophy, but there is a duality that has always existed. I mean, there is the yin and the yang, the good and the bad, the up and the down, the heaven and hell, the black and the white. I mean, all those things kind of exist simultaneously. So when something bad happens, you have to ask yourself, what good just happened? Because there is something good that just happened. Just like when something good that happens to you, you have to ask yourself, is there something bad that just happened? Because there probably was. You have to look at both sides so you get the full picture. Most of us don't take the time to do that. So when we are looking at some negative reports of what playing video games do, we also have to understand the positive things that are happening with kids playing video games. And as a matter of fact, I'll give you a few minutes of how positive it can be. I've got a my younger brother still has some young kids, and one of his sons is Ethan. And I actually share this story in the book Flash Foresight. And Ethan is a freshman in high school, and he, before going to school, he is playing his Xbox 360 video game. And if you really ask yourself, what is an Xbox? It really is an advanced, photorealistic, interspatial, three-dimensional simulation machine that's probably more powerful from, as a simulator than your current business computer, if you, you know, have one at work. So, and what's he doing? Well, Ethan plays strategy games. And he will study these games before playing them. Last time I talked to him, he spent about 20 hours studying a game before even playing it, because, as he said, I like to win. So, by the way, do these kids take notes? No, they got good memories. Do these kids know how to focus? Yeah, they focus like a laser light. We just have trouble getting them to focus on the stuff we want them to focus on, but they still have that capability. And when Ethan's playing one of these strategy games, he's not playing alone. He's actually got a team. His team in his latest game is he's got a kid outside of Toronto. By the way, Ethan is in Madison, Wisconsin. He's got a kid outside of Paris and a kid in South Korea. Huh. And they are not just cooperating together. They're actually working at a higher level. They're collaborating as an international team to accomplish a shared goal. Boy, sounds kind of like an international business, doesn't it? And Ethan isn't just typing on using a joystick, he's got a headset on, and he's talking using the international language of business and gaming, which happens to be English. And he is not just talking and typing and using a joystick, he's got full video conferencing right on his system. So he can see the people he's talking to because he understands the power of visual communications, which most adults don't get yet. So the point I'm getting is he is actually doing some very high-level things that most business people aren't even doing yet that can have a profound payoff in the world of work later on. So with that little story, all I'm doing is sharing with you that there is an upside and a downside to everything. The key is to seek balance.
I mean, that story is so fascinating because in ways we don't fully understand in the present, the way these kids are developing their brains and their skills will allow them to go forward as kind of leaping into new possibilities that we can't even imagine what they will do with those abilities and with those resources that they have created, you know, in their childhood.
Exactly. And in the same sense, I think that's important. I mentioned my brother's kid, Ethan. It's just as important for Ethan to understand that now, since he's a guy, important for him to understand to get together with the buddies, because he's still in high school, to learn how to socialize with actual people, not just on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's important, too, if he happens to like baseball or football, to learn about teams and working together as a team in something other than a video game. So it's helping him to make sure that he gets a balance in life, not just a one dimension in life. Because once again, if you leave kids alone, they'll plunk themselves in front of a TV or a computer and just sit there.
Right.
And that's why we need to be good parents and do the hard job. And of
right.
course, the hard job of being a parent is you've got to make sure they don't just do what they want to do, and you don't just let them have a single dimension to their life. It's the parents that, of course, are not, it's easier to just let them do their thing. But I'm suggesting, actually, one of the seven principles in Flash Foresight is to not let the future just unfold, but to actually actively shape it so that you can create a better tomorrow.
Right.
So I don't want to see, if we just sit back and let it unfold, it may not be as good a future as it could have been if we would have thought about it ahead of time. I want us to actually think about it for our personal lives, for our families, for our kids, as well as for our careers, and ask ourselves, you know, based on where I can see things going, and we haven't talked about that yet in this interview, but there's a way to do that, based on what I am certain about in the future. By the way, there's a way to do that. We just haven't talked about that yet.
We will.
How can I use those forces to create a better job for myself or role in my career or experiences for my kids so that I'm actually preparing them for a future that will happen instead of one that is fading away?
Right. You know, and that's where I want us to go next. I'd like you to share some of your insights, as because you do have your finger on a pulse of what's emerging. And how does some of the knowledge that you have benefit the average citizen out there, those of us who may not be in working with a big corporation and who has, interest and investment in these technologies, but the transition and change that's going on in our society right now. What are some of the things that you've learned that you can pass on to those of us who are in this process of change? Or, maybe it's their jobs that are changing. Maybe it's their health that's changing. What are some of the things you think would be beneficial for us to know as a futurist?
Well, thank you. One of the principles in the book, and again, let's look at the reason I called the book Flash Foresight versus Flash Hindsight is because hindsight, you can't change the past. No matter what you do, you can't change the past. As a matter of fact, usually looking at hindsight only brings lament. You should have bought Google when it came out, or I should have done this, or I should have done that. The trouble is you can't go back and change the past. The reason I wrote the book Flash Foresight is because you can shape the future, even though you can't change the past. So there's some power there. Secondly, the reason I made the subtitle How to See the Invisible and Do the Impossible is because history has shown that ever since man set foot on this planet, ever since us humans have been around, we've been redefining what is possible over and over again. And hey, we put men on the moon, we got jets that fly around. I mean, it's submarines. I mean, we're doing things that were impossible at one time. How do we do the impossible? And the answer is by making invisible solutions to problems and invisible opportunities visible. So I've got 7 principles in the book that make the invisible visible. Let me give you one right now that could help any single person, no matter who they are, what their age is, whether they're working or not. And that is, take your problem, whatever problem you got right now, and skip it. Now, here's what I mean, because it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, whatever challenge or problem you've got, here's an important insight. That's not it. That's why you haven't solved it. You're smart. You would have solved it by now. You're working on the wrong one. It's kind of like an onion. If you peel it back just 1 or 2 levels, you can actually find the real problem and solve it. That's why you're stuck. So a way to get unstuck is to apply my principle. Take the problem and skip it, because by skipping it, you can find the real one. So let me bring this concept to life by giving you some examples. Because in the book, as in this interview, you'll see I'm really just a storyteller, and I'm just going to give you some stories so that you can see how the concepts work. I'm going to give you a 60-second business example, and then I'll give you a personal example. The business example. There was a big drug company, Eli Lilly, and I met with their executives a number of years ago, and they said, "We got a problem." Now, right away, I had an advantage over them because I knew whatever they were about to tell me, that wasn't it. Mm-hmm. After all, they're smart. They should have figured it out by now. So they said, "Here's our problem. We don't have the budget that we need to hire the extra 2,000 PhD researchers we need to solve the molecular problems that we have so that we can get more drugs in the pipeline so that our stock price will go up. Because our stock price goes up when we have more drugs in the pipeline. To do that, we need more molecular problems solved. To do that, we figure we need 2,000 additional PhD researchers. Our problem is we don't have a budget for them." So I said, "Okay, good. Let's skip it." So what do? Well, we peel it back a notch. Here's what we did. We took their molecular problems, posted them in a dozen languages on the Internet, and said, "We pay for solutions." Now they've got thousands and thousands and thousands of researchers from all over the world submitting solutions to their molecular problems, and Eli Lilly buys the solutions they want to buy. Was the problem that they didn't have a budget? No. Problem is they were working on the wrong problem. You got to peel it back. Now let me give you this same example, except now let me give you a very different type of example, a personal one, in that I was sharing in a speech I was giving to a couple of thousand people a while ago. There was, when I finished speaking, and I did share the problem-skipping concept in that speech, there was a group of people who wanted to talk to me afterwards, as you know often happens to a speaker. And there was a woman off to the side, and I could see that she wanted to talk to me, but she wanted to talk to me privately. So when the crowd kind of dissipated, and she came over to me, and she said, Mr. Burris, I got a problem I can't skip. And I said, oh, yeah, tell me what it is. And she said, well, I was just diagnosed with terminal cancer, very rapid growing. I have less than a year to live. I've looked. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm going to die, and here's my problem. I don't want to die. I'm thinking about dying all the time. I can't even sleep at night because I'm obsessed with the fact that I'm going to die in a short amount of time, and frankly, I don't want to die. How do I skip this? How do I skip that? And I said, well, why don't you save thinking about dying until you're dead? And why don't you think about living while you're still alive? Now, I got to tell you, 30 days later, I got an email from her. I've kept that email, by the way. She was in Europe with her sister on a vacation. And she said, thank you. You changed my life. Let me give you a... So you see what I'm getting at, is mm-hmm. that... what we think it is. Let's take savings. I talked to someone just yesterday who said, you know, I can't save any money. I'm trying really hard. I just can't seem to save any money. And that's because it's the wrong problem. I said, you know, there's a reason you can't save money. The problem is you haven't learned how to spend money. If you changed how you spent money, you'd save money by default. So you see, they were working on the wrong one. So the concept I'm sharing here is that whatever problem you got, no wonder you're stuck. It's the wrong one. Another one of the, and by the way, that makes invisible opportunities, of course, visible, and invisible solutions to your problems visible, because now you found the real one. Another one that I have shared in the book, one of the ways of making the invisible visible, is opposites work better. Opposites always work better. So you take the concept and you flip it inside out. By the way, when that woman came up to me and said, I'm thinking about dying and all I can do is think about death, what did I do? I just flipped it over and took the opposite. Why don't you think about living instead and save thinking about dying till you're dead? Well, opposites work better, and it worked for her. When someone came up to me and said, you know, my problem is I can't save any money, how did I find the answer? Well, it's the opposite of saving. Spending. All right. Well, your problem is you can't spend. They're not spending properly. So you see, opposites can give you another fantastic solution. Let me give you a quick business example. Business example is, I was just in New York not long ago, and there were all of these beautiful shoes. I know my wife, if she would have been with me, would have loved a lot of those shoe stores and been in them, because there were these beautiful, expensive leather shoes from Italy and so on, just gorgeous. What is the opposite of an expensive leather shoe? And the opposite is an ugly plastic shoe. Well, there's a company called Crocs that have done quite well selling ugly plastic shoes. As a matter of fact, they've made billions of dollars doing that. So you see, opposites can work better. So the way that you can see my approach is to look at ways that ask ourselves, what is it that I can do? Instead of being unempowered by all the things I can't do. Instead of saying, here's all the things I can't afford, I like to ask myself, what can I afford? Instead of all the things I can't do, what are the things I can do? In other words, I want to get myself empowered to move forward rather than stuck so that I can't move forward.
You know, those are really powerful statements you've made, because basically you're saying, if I hear you correctly, that if we're in a problem situation, we have to learn how to phrase things differently. We have to learn how to language things differently, so we can start by languaging, by saying things differently, we start looking at things differently and seeing possibilities than the old way of going over and over, you know, I'm stuck, I don't have money, you know, my career isn't working for me, you know, I don't know. that way of languaging and continuing repeating it is just going to keep us stuck, and we have to shift things, even just how we choose to frame or say something.
Absolutely.
Do you agree with that? Is that true? I mean, would that be a true statement?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now it's very clear why you have a successful show. And you do great things because you are very insightful and you hit the nail on the head. It's a matter of fact, one of the concepts that I shared in the book, I remember one of the things I said of the seven principles is to direct your future, because if you don't, others will do it for you. In other words, you can have some control. You see, change comes to all of us from the outside in, causing us to react. We have to react, which is crisis management, putting out fires. We spend most of our time doing that. But growth is really when it is controlled by you and when you are empowered. Growth comes from the inside out, both personally, by the way, as well as organizationally, if you're within a company. So if you want to have some control, it can't all come from the outside in. It's got to come from the inside out. And one of the things I do in the book is really try to show how that can work and how your view of the future can shape that. Now, here's what I mean by that. The word phraseology is...
Can you hold that thought? Because we're going to take a break right now, just a quick break, and we're going to come back and we're going to hear what some of those really insightful thoughts are that you're sharing with us. So, Daniel, just... hang in there. And to all my listeners, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and we will be right back to continue a fascinating conversation, so don't go away.
Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for all things progressive.
Hi, I'm Allison Rose Levy. I've been a health journalist for 25 years. I'm currently blogging on the Huffington Post. After more than two decades of studying, talking about, exchanging, and reporting on integrative well-being and collective psychology, I think we're ready to step up to the next level. On Connect the Dots, we're going to reach beyond the merely individual look at health to look at the community, societal, and global level of what we need to address to better our health. Please join me Saturdays at noon Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network, and I look forward to dialoguing with you.
Hi, this is Dr. Meir Eisenstein. Every Thursday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Time, I will be coming to you live on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. I will bring my background as a physician and as an attorney to help you with a minimal pharmaceutical and a minimal surgical approach to your medical issues. Please come join me.
So to join in on the conversation, call 888-874-4888. Ask Dr. Eisenstein, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Progressive Radio Network.
Your favorite show on Progressive Radio Network? Go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com anytime, day or night, for all of our great shows. Don't be left out and miss important shows and information. Visit ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and be in the loop.
Hey, Lee.
Yeah, Jeff.
Your girlfriend gave another interview.
No. Don't play it.
Listen to this.
I have a journalism degree. That is what I studied. I understand that this cornerstone of our democracy is a free press.
Shut it off! I said not to play it!
We are in the worst reality show in history.
Why won't she shut up?
You know she's going to be president, right?
Okay, stop it. That's not funny!
I think we should just go limp. Lay back. Maybe then the Mama Grizzly won't tear off your limbs.
Cheater in the Rude, Thursdays, 8 p.m., Progressive Radio Network.
You are listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Okay. Okay, we are back. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman. You're listening to What Women Must Know, and we have the most amazing conversation happening here with Daniel Burris, who is the author of Flash Foresight, How to See the Invisible and Do the Impossible. And Daniel has been working with Fortune 500 companies. He is a futurist. He is there providing great insight into the possibilities that are right there. Actually, they're not over the horizon. They're appearing as we speak. And he's been helping us to understand what's going on as well as to apply some of these principles in our own personal life. So, Daniel, we were having a conversation about some of the possibilities of creating personal change. So we took a break. Now we're back. So just continue on with what you were sharing. It was so interesting.
Yeah, there's a phrase that I've been using for 28 years that I'll share with all of us right now because it's very powerful, and that is future view. Now, let's just think about that a minute. How you, how your kids, how your spouse, how your employees, it doesn't matter, it's really how anybody views the future, to a great extent shapes how they act in the present. For example, right now there are people that are buying Apple computer stock, and right now there are people that are selling Apple computer stock. What's the difference? And it's their future view of Apple. Right now there are people that are working in companies that are planning on leaving, and other people are planning on staying. What's the difference? Their view of that company and staying or leaving with that company. Right now there are kids that are planning on going to college and other kids are planning on going to drugs. What's the difference? Well, it's their future view. You see, how you view the future shapes how you act in the present, and how you act in the present shapes your future. Therefore, your future view will determine the future you. And I think most of us are undershooting our future view tremendously. Because, number one, we don't realize the transformational time we're in. You see, here's an insight for everyone. Bad news sells. Good news doesn't sell. So the press focuses on bad news. Matter of fact, if there's no bad news to report, they'll give you the anniversary of bad news. And what we have to understand, and what I make a good case for in the book, is that there is a mountain of opportunity in front of us right now because of the changes that are happening, but it is fogged in by all the news and all the issues and problems that we hear about every day. And because we have this fog, we really are stuck with inaction. And I think it's important for us to blow away the fog so that we can have a more accurate future view. And to do that, one of the first of the seven principles in Flash Foresight, I say start with certainty. Because in an uncertain world where there's so much change going on, I don't know if I'm going to have a job or not have a job, I don't know if gas prices are going down or up, we have all these uncertainty. We have to ask ourselves, what are we certain about? I mean, are you certain of nothing? And the answer is, well, you can be certain about a lot. Now, for example, it's spring. What's next? Summer. Hey, I'll be right. That's because there's over 300 known cycles that let you anticipate the future. I mean, we know what time school is going to start again, and we know what time summer vacation starts. It's a cycle. But farmers know when they're going to plant and when they're going to sow. It's all part of these cycles. But there's another kind of change that's affecting us now that's never really happened very much in the past, but now it's happening really fast. I call it linear change. You see, once you get a smartphone, you're not going to go back to a dumb phone. That's a one-way street. Once the Chinese get a car and park their bicycle, they're not going back to a bicycle. Once the people in India get a refrigerator for the first time, they're not going to say, gee, I don't want refrigeration anymore and get rid of it. No, that's a one-way street. And once as the baby boomers get older, they're not all of a sudden going to get younger. It's a one-way linear road we're on. So if we really think about the things that we can be certain about, it's amazingly powerful. There's even something I call hard trends and soft trends in the book that might sound academic, but actually it's not. Soft trends will happen. Hard trends will happen. Soft trends might happen. So once again, I want to do a little separating. Let's take Elvis Presley. Decades ago, Elvis Presley died. And from the year he died, for the next 10 years, every year there was an increasing number of professional Elvis impersonators. And if you would have, back then, if you would have done a graph and taken it out to the year 2000, it would have showed that 1 in 3 Americans would have been Elvis and Preston raised by the year 2000. Of course, 1 in 3 by 2000 Americans are not Elvis impersonators. That didn't happen. So that was a soft trend, even though they were using numbers to come up with the answer. Similar, when in the year 2000, our own government projected a $1 trillion surplus. You remember that prediction?
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen. We're in the opposite right now. Mm-hmm. How could our own government be so wrong? Weren't they looking at numbers? And the answer is yes, but they were drawing soft trends. So I want to be careful about predicting things and projecting trends that are soft, meaning, you know what, they look good, but they're not going to happen, versus the things that we know will happen. For example, I used the baby boomers, 78 million baby boomers, or 65, that's the oldest. You know what, they're going to get older. Matter of fact, let's even be entrepreneurial for a second and just play this game a minute. Let's start a business based on a hard trend to show how it can be so powerful, because right now job creation would be a good thing. Let's take the 78 million baby boomers, and a lot of them love to boat. But as we know from our experiences with our own parents and grandmas and grandpas, as they get older, it gets hard to get in and out of that boat. It gets hard to launch the boat. So what if we created a company and created the easy launch trailer? Do you think it would have the power of demographics and those 78 million baby boomers getting older every year fueling the growth of that company? And the answer is yes. It's a hard trend. Of course you're going to get more people buying it every year. Or let's say we create a company that creates an elevator that only goes up one flight of steps and it retrofits on the outside of a house or a condo. Do you think that business would grow every year just because of demographics and the hard tender demographics? And the answer is yes, of course it would. So we could actually create amazing jobs and get out of this recession if we would use hard trends to just think entrepreneurial and create great jobs. Even technology, amazingly enough, is predictable. For example, let's take something like the iPhone. Now, Apple has not announced or talked about the next iPhone. They just launched their latest iPad 2, but they haven't been talking about the new iPhone. Yet, frankly, you and I already know about the next iPhone. Will it have a faster processor in it? The answer is, of course it will. They always do. Will it have more storage in it? And the answer is, of course, they also have more storage. You can also put more music and stuff in there. Will it have more bandwidth? I mean, we've got the cell phone companies have 3G now. They're starting to have 4G. Boy, I wonder if we could predict what they're going to call the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I know. Hey, they'll call it 5G. And you know what? You're right. So actually, all this stuff is actually predictable. So here's the problem. People are too busy to think about this stuff. We don't spend any time thinking about our future. We spend too much time crisis managing in the present. So one of the things I'm asking all of us to do in this book and on this interview is to realize, number one, you're going to spend the rest of your life in the future. It's that important. Maybe we should think about it, much less even make it better than it would have been. So what I suggest is that 1 hour a week, you unplug from all of the things that are going on in your world at the moment, and plug into where you're going to spend the rest of your life, plug into your future. Ask yourself in that hour, what are the things that I know will happen with certainty? What are the things that I can see? Are there any cycles that I know of? Are there any hard trends? Are there any things, for example, if you've got a kid that is a sophomore in high school, let's project ahead. They're not graduating. Am I ready for that? Et cetera, et cetera. So let's project ahead the things we do know, we'll throw out the things we don't know, and then ask ourselves, are there any problems I'm going to have that I don't have now, but now that I've looked, I can see I'm going to have those problems, and then solve them so you don't have them in the first place. I call it solving tomorrow's predictable problems today. You see, by getting a handle on the things you can control instead of controlling nothing, you actually gain some control. Again, you can't predict everything, but you can predict enough to do some amazing things. And again, when you apply some of the other things I talked about, like problem skipping and so on, it's very powerful. And then on a level of asking, you know, of shaping our future, here's an interesting thing. I have found over the years that I've never been afraid of dreaming, and I like people to dream and to think big. And one of the things I've learned over the years, and I've started six companies that have done well over the years. And before that, by the way, I was a teacher, and I've taught everything from graduate school down to sixth grade. And so I've worked with kids in that way as well. And I was an educator the first year of my teaching year, so I've done well doing those things. And what I've learned is, whenever I thought big, as I got older, I realized, you know what, I really thought small at the time, because there's always a bigger big. You know, if you talk to a kid who's thinking big, and then you talk to Warren Buffett and ask Warren Buffett what thinking big is compared to the kid who just graduated from college, they both will have a different big, because the kid from college has no idea what's even possible compared to what a Warren Buffett or a Bill Gates would think. So the reality is, if you think you can, this is the little engine that could, you're more likely to be able to. I mean, I remember when I was a kid thinking, you know, I'm going to live on a lake. And I do, by the way. I know other people that have said, oh, I'd love to live on a lake, but I could never do that. Well, you know, we've both been right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How do we stretch our thinking so we can be more expansive and possibility thinking?
We are all, as humans, more than we think we are. Let me give you an example. I know every person, including you, have touched Braille at some point in your life. Would you say yes to that?
Mm-hmm.
Of course. We all have touched Braille. Might be in an elevator or somewhere. We just touched it. And I know what you thought, and everybody thought, the minute they touched Braille. You think to yourself, well, how the heck could they read that?
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is they can. Now, does that mean they have different fingers? No, the blind do not have different fingers. Actually, they develop their sense of touch further than we've developed our sense of touch because they needed to. In other words, we've all got this amazing sense of touch that we're underutilizing. Well, we've got a whole bunch of aspects to us as humans that we're totally underutilizing because we're spending too much time watching TV and worrying about all these problems. Instead of realizing, wow, we were given some amazing capabilities, maybe I don't have to be the smartest person on the planet. I just have to use what I've got and function at the best level that I can be. I mean, all I want to do is to be the best me I can be. I don't have to be the best you. I just want to be the best me. And that gets me even excited about getting older. You know, I am excited about getting older. I can't wait till I'm 90. I can't wait till I'm 95. And I mean that. And the reason I mean that is I can be better. Now, I can't be better at everything because I'm getting older. But you know what? I can be a better friend. I can be a better husband. I can be a more giving business person. I can be better at so many things. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what? I choose to be better. And if I choose to be better every year, hey, you know what? I get excited about getting older. See, it's about mindset.
I have to ask you, Daniel, have you always, as a young person, had that curiosity and optimism and, you know, kind of that desire to explore possibilities? Has that always been a part of your nature?
I think it has been a part of my nature, but I have learned and grown and refined it over the years because, for example, let me just share something with all of you that have a kid that, if I was sitting down next to your kid right now, here's what I would suggest to them. Notice I didn't say tell them to do. But I would suggest that they consider, because I love to put it in that phrase. When I was 23 years old, I don't know why I did this, I just decided to do it. I decided I would learn to do one new thing a year. Because you know what? One is doable. Four or five may be hard, but one. So 1 year I learned how to scuba dive. 1 year I learned how to fly a plane. 1 year I learned how to climb a mountain. 1 year I really got into doing photography. 1 year I learned how to make a film. That was 40 years ago. And the reality is, boy, can I ever do a lot of stuff. And here's the other thing. Some of those things I was just okay at. But some of those things, it turned out, I was really good at. I just would have never known had I ever tried. For example, now you won't find this on my website or my biographies because it's too much stuff, but, you know, I got into filmmaking 1 year. Turned out I made four films in 1 year, and each one won a first place for a film festival. Mm-hmm. I've actually been a feature artist at a couple of universities. Now, it isn't like everything I do is good. No, some things I do are just okay. But when you're trying one thing anew every year, first of all, it enriches your life. And secondly, over time, you will discover some things you are amazing at you just would have never known because you would have never tried.
And that's just having the courage to step into some new territories that you really have never entered before and feel comfortable in something totally out of your, you know, out of your reach, so to speak, you know, up until that point, anyway.
And be willing to fail. See, that's the other thing. Everybody fails. Everybody fails. I've just learned how to fail fast because, you know, I can't afford to fail slow. So, but I'm not afraid to, but what I realize is I know old people that are wise and I know old people that are just old. Now, what's the difference? That's a good question because I'd like to be an old wise person. So what's the difference? Well, an old wise people, first of all, they've learned from their mistakes and changed their behavior. Ooh, that's a good thing. Secondly, they've learned from other people's mistakes so they didn't have to make them in the first place. And I think some of our biggest lessons in life that we get are from our mistakes. So if we are not willing to make mistakes, we miss the opportunity of learning the biggest lessons in life. So I think mistakes and failure is not the issue. I think it's about learning and growth. And once again, out of the things that I was just mediocre at, for example, one year, since my wife loved to dance, I decided I wanted to learn how to dance. So I spent a year really taking ballroom dancing and really learning how to dance, and now I can dance with confidence, and she loves it, and I love it. But you know what? I'm not Fred Astaire. I'm not going to win any contest. I'm just an okay dancer. But you know what? It enriched my life.
Yeah.
It made my life better. So even something like that is great. I mean, one year I just decided I want to learn how to cook. My mom never taught me how to cook when I was a kid. And I went through most of my adult life having other people cook for me, and I thought, you know, this year I'm going to learn how to cook. Well, it turns out I'm not a world-class cook, but you know what? I can really do a good job, and it's very rewarding, and now I love to cook. So you see, it adds up over the years.
Yeah.
So it enriches your life. So no matter what your age is now, I would say consider it.
Yeah. So you're still doing one new thing a year. That's like a part of your life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, I'll tell you what it is this year. It's singing.
Oh, good.
I put myself through college playing lead guitar in a band. Now, that's a long time ago.
Uh-huh.
And I was a really good guitar player. But, you know, I could sing, but we had such great singers in the band, I never sang, because why should I? They're fantastic. And so I went through my whole life. I still like to play every now and then because I love music, but I never sang. And I thought, you know, this year I'm plugging in a microphone and I'm gonna get into singing and just see what I can do. And you know what? It's coming along really good. I'm enjoying it. Matter of fact, right now in my home, I've got a microphone hooked up right downstairs in the living room, and I'm ready to go.
Right. Are you taking singing lessons? Are you working with a teacher, or are you just having fun on your own?
No, what I'm doing is I'm having fun on my own with it because I can tell when I'm out, but what I'm doing is I'm singing with other musicians when I get together and jam with them, and we have a date planned where we're going to have about 300 people together that we're going to perform for, and I'm going to be singing. So I've already got a goal.
Right. You know, that's so inspiring. Thanks for that. You know, by the way, you probably already know this, but one of the activities that helps to develop and increase your brain is learning new physical movements like dancing. So learning dancing, if you haven't ever done dancing before, now if you're really good at dancing, it's not going to have the same effect, but if you learn something new and you start off really awkward and kind of two left feet but get better, that is growing your brain.
I fully believe it, and again, I think that that's another reason why it's important for us as parents to make sure we get the kids not just in front of a computer. Because, first of all, the computer's not evil. They are learning some good things there that will be part of life's lesson for them, and they can apply it even in their career, as I shared with the Ethan story. But on the other hand, hey, we got to develop a whole brain here, and they need some social experiences that are not just online social. So, again, it's about the balance.
Right. So, you know, before we come to the end of the show, you have some information and insights into your book, Flash Foresight. What's happening in the wellness industry. Can you share some of those things, since this is more of a holistic show on health? Well, what are some of the things happening in that realm that we're going to be seeing more of in the days, weeks, months, years ahead?
Yeah, well, I am a very big believer in a holistic approach to health. And I also am a big believer that health and wellness is a combination of mind, body, and spirit. And thirdly, my feeling, and again, remember, I come from it as a science guy. I actually taught science and biology and physics for a number of years. So even as a science guy, I can say that with and feel very strong about it. And thirdly, we have to remember that healing is a science and an art. And if it was just a science, then it wouldn't matter who your doctor is, for example. But because it's a science and an art, it does matter who your physician is. It does matter who your nurse is, because they're bringing us another, the art part of it, to the process. And the healthcare reform that has taken place in government recently really wasn't healthcare reform. It primarily was payment reform. So the real revolution in healthcare is not so much in payments, but it's in the delivery of the system as well as the integration of it. So I think we have some amazing things that we can do going forward. For example, using our smartphones to do remote diagnostics and remote disease management. Will be done in the very near future. It's starting to happen already. Being able to have your television and be able to go to a virtual hospital, which is actually a real hospital, where you're talking live to a real nurse, but you're doing it from your home. They can see you. You can see them. Your e-patient record is already in their hands. You can say, I've got heart palpitations, I think I'm having a heart attack, and they can say, well, take out the little BIOS ring and the BIOS sensors that came with your little kit, because it's cheaper to give everyone a kit than have them go to the emergency room when they don't need to be there. And we will be able to get your EKG, blood pressure, pulse, and temperature right now while you're at home, saving you the trip. And we can do exactly what we'd be doing in the emergency room for real, just to see whether you really need to come in or not. By the way, that could save billions of dollars every year off of our system, just in doing that alone. And I'm just giving you a real quick little injection.
Yeah.
Also, I think we're getting to a stage where we're starting to see traditional doctors starting to embrace alternative therapies and even things like acupuncture, which they would have never looked at years ago. They're now starting to realize is valid, and I think that we're coming around to what some of us have known all along, and that is an integrated, holistic approach that is focused on prevention, not just curing.
Daniel, that's a great note to wrap this whole conversation up with. Before we go, we're about out of time. Just give the website so people can get more information about your book, Flash Forward, and about you.
Yes, they could go to flashforesight.com, and I even have some extra gifts that you can get there if you want to go there. And then secondly, my last name, Burrus. You could go to Burrus, B-U-R-R-U-S.com, and there's a lot of great articles to read and tips to help you with your life as well as with business.
Daniel, this has been such a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.